Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today on Christmas Day, we will look into the real meaning of Christmas and what it has to do with the frenzy of materialism that has been underway since Thanksgiving. Best-selling author Frank Schaefer, who previously worked with such figures as Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, and focused on the family's James Dobson, before breaking with the religious right his father helped create, joins us. We will discuss the phony war on Christmas that the right wing have created out of thin air as a rally to the support of a fellow Christian, the patriarch of the Duck Dynasty, whose hateful rhetoric they are defending in the name of the prophet of peace and love, whose birthday is being celebrated today. Then we will hear from Sister Ann Kendrick, one of the founders of the Hope Community Center in Apopka, Florida, where she addresses the problems confronting migrant farm laborers in Central Florida. We will discuss how she and the families of mostly undocumented immigrants celebrate Christmas and the gulf between the material wants that overwhelm our culture and the spiritual needs that she ministers to the least among us, as the gulf between the rich and the poor widens in the land of plenty, where just one family has a personal wealth equal to the entire wealth of 40% of all Americans. And joining us now on this Christmas holiday is Frank Schaefer, who is a best-selling author of fiction and nonfiction. His parents, Francis and Edith Schaefer, were world-famous evangelical speakers and authors, and he previously worked with such figures as Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, and Focus on the Family's James Dobson. Frank Schaefer, however, felt increasingly alienated and experienced a crisis of faith that would ultimately lead to his departure from the evangelical movement, and his novels include Portofino and Saving Grandma. The nonfiction books include Crazy for God, Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism, and Sex, Mum, and God. And his latest book is And God Said Billy. Welcome to Background Briefing, Frank Schaefer.
Hey, thanks, Ian.
And on this Christmas holiday, I'd like to talk to you about the God of love and so much hate that spews out in the name of the God of love.
Right.
We've had this recent example of it with the patriarch of the Duck Dynasty reality show on television who made racist and hideously homophobic remarks that Of course, all couched in religion. The show always ends with the family sitting around at the table saying grace, and constantly the program is replete with references to God and religion. And Sarah Palin, of course, has come to their rescue in the name of God. So how do you reconcile that those that believe that they are practitioners of a religion of humility and love can be so hateful?
Well, you know, it's ironic because here we are on Christmas, and of course, one of the one of the bêtes noires of the right is to always go on and on and on about the so-called war on Christmas. But of course, there is actually a war on Christmas, and it's being carried on by people who call themselves Christians and who have so denigrated the name and reputation of Christianity, and therefore by extension Jesus, that they have managed to do what no atheist like Christopher Hitchens or Dawkins or any of these other people could ever dream of doing in terms of discrediting the message of Christianity. You know, when you look, for instance, at Pope Francis and how people have been so eager to hear him talk about something positive in terms of laying off the whipping boys of the evangelical and Roman Catholic right. Here's a pope who hasn't changed doctrine. He hasn't included women in the priesthood. He hasn't said that gay marriage is okay. But just because he comes over as a decent human being with a little bit of humility, a little bit of compassion, even secular folks who are not particularly fond of Christianity or the church are eager for that message. And I think what that shows is that far from there being a secular war on Christmas or a secular war on religion, the reputation of religion has been so damaged, whether it's suicide bombers in the Middle East doing things in the name of Islam or homophobic Christians who just keep going back to this incredible cyclical kind of vision of America where the outsider, whether it's the immigrant or the gay person or the black person or our first black president, whoever it happens to be that week, gets in for a good beating in moralistic terms. It's such a shame. So I just think, what a contrast to those comments to, say, Pope Francis's comments. And I'm not a Roman Catholic by any means. But I think it really it illustrates something, and that is that the worst enemy of the witness of the gospel has never been the secular person. It's always been, in this culture anyway, the people who were doing outrageous things in the name of the gospel. And of course, I look very closely at how President Obama has been treated since he came to office. You know, you take away the 60 or 70% that make up the basis of the Tea Party, and all of a sudden the lies the birthers told about him not being an American go away. You take away Franklin Graham and the Billy Graham empire, and the lies about him being a Muslim go away. You take away the religious right and people like Sarah Palin and these other folks, and the lies about him coddling terrorism go away. So it is a bit much to come into the Christian the Christmas season and have Christians, you know, wailing about how they aren't allowed to put a creche up somewhere, where the real damage being done to Christianity is by folks who are speaking in the name of Christ. So, you know, I'm someone who is progressive in my political views and in my religious views, but frankly, you know, I still consider myself a Christian, not in the evangelical sense or in the literalistic fundamentalist sense, but in a cultural sense and in a sense of appreciation for big chunks of Western culture and the liberty that we have here, including women's rights, gay rights, for instance, which I think can be traced directly back in some ways to the teaching of Jesus, in terms of not picking up the stone to execute someone unless you feel yourself you've made no mistakes, or not judging others lest you be judged. These sorts of teachings ring very true to me.
Now, in terms of Christian fundamentalism in this country, and particularly the televangelical side of it, if you will, I've often thought it's really just a front for right-wing politics. And when you talk about a war on Christmas, it does seem to be a part of this kind of right-wing fraud, because the right wing in this country always try to promote themselves and portray themselves as beleaguered, oppressed. You know, Limbaugh's brother wrote a book about how oppressed Christians are in this country,
right,
which is an absurd notion. I mean, the right wing is not oppressed in this country. It's funded by people like the Koch brothers. They have unlimited funds. They,
right.
I mean, what are they talking about? And it seems to me that the war on Christmas, again, is like, what are they talking about? They just make stuff up.
Well, of course, the Koch brothers are an interesting point, because they use the foot soldiers provided by the evangelicals for their political ends, but of course they make their money in a different way. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine who's a geologist up in Oregon. I went up to speak to a gathering of atheists and agnostics up there, mostly scientists, not that I'm a science person, but they were interested in my journey away from fundamentalism. And I was talking about my new book, And God Said Billy, which is really a portrait of religious delusion of just this kind being politically manipulated. And he was telling me something interesting. He said, hey, listen, you know, the Koch brothers are oil men. That's where they make their money. And they fund all these right-wing fundamentalist groups that are also creationists and don't believe in geology. But he said, you better believe one thing, and that is when they send out their geological survey teams to find oil, those guys believe in evolution or they wouldn't be able to find the oil. So they make their money in the oil business out of understanding how geology and the science of the planet work. But when they give their money, they're funding these lunatic groups that don't believe in evolution, that don't believe in global warming. And, you know, that's an interesting point, because it goes to show the hypocrisy in both directions. You know, the religious right talks about their biblical absolutes and their biblical views, but of course they're in bed with people who are much more dedicated to Ayn Rand and this kind of scorched earth policy against the poor, taking away food stamps, aid to dependent mothers, whatever it may be this week on one hand. And then on the other hand, you know, just out and out denying the teachings of Christ when it comes to caring for the least of these, that kind of hypocrisy. And then the kind of hypocrisy that you see in terms of what you were talking about, this beleaguered victimization, this idea that somehow poor little me, you know, our country's been taken away from us. And yet you see the last years of obstruction that President Obama has faced, and far from the country having been taken away from these folks, they've managed to reduce his presidency, you know, in leaps and bounds, and even threatened to bring both the economy and the world economy to its knees if they don't get their way, and have been in a position to do that. So The reality of the fact is that in this country you really have a war, but it's not a war on religion. It's a war by religious people on the majority. And they have been very clever in finding the choke points, for instance, the primary process in the political process of primarying candidates in the Republican Party to make sure that the whole party has been driven further and further to the right. These guys have found these choke points, and they're very well funded. They've used them cleverly. And unfortunately, a lot of the folks who follow them send the donations, whether it's to the televangelists or to the political candidate or who pressure the Supreme Court in the case of their rulings recognizing corporations as people, so that there's unlimited funding now for politics in a way we never had before. When you add all this up, the right wing has been in the driver's seat to the extent that they have been able to stymie the will of the majority, who, after all, elected Barack Obama twice. And instead of getting the agenda that he set out to accomplish, he's had to compromise at every turn just to keep the government open, to prevent these folks from literally overthrowing the government in its proper function. So this is a party of revolution. They're a party of extremists and radicals. The right wing in America has become our version of the Taliban, and one of their methods that they have for extracting, should we say, the bribe from the rest of us to keep this country going, is for us to make accommodations to them on these ridiculous church-state issues. One example being, for instance, the way the evangelical right and the Roman Catholic bishops have teamed up to present Obama as anti-religious because he had the temerity to want to provide contraception to all women who had health care plans in this country, be they corporations run by Roman Catholics or large institutions like Georgetown University or a hospital or whatever it may be. And so that's the kind of thing that we've faced, and it's a sort of an Orwellian double talk here, where you have these folks saying that they're being oppressed, but at the same time turning around, for instance, in the name of religious freedom, trying to strip women of the right to contraceptives paid for by an insurance carrier. And that would be a typical example of how in actual practice the lie has been given to the idea that they're being oppressed.
Well, let's take a brief station break, Frank Schaefer, on this Christmas Day special broadcast, and we'll be back in a moment after this brief message.
Burning Isaac, Jesus coming. Jesus comes to pave the way. Do you believe in his sweet sensation? Do you believe in the second chance? Do you believe rapture?
Well, I don't care if it rains or freezes, long as I got my blessed Jesus riding on the dashboard of my car. Through all trials and tribulations and my travels through the nations with my blessed Jesus I'll go far.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And continuing the conversation now with Frank Schaefer, who's a best-selling author of fiction and nonfiction. His books include Crazy for God, Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism, and Sex, Mom, and God. And his latest is And God Said Billy. So how do we revive the real meaning of Christmas, for example? All we've seen now is just an unmitigated and unrelenting surge, I'll use the favorite term, surge of materialism that started with Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving used to be a wonderful American holiday where family got together. It wasn't about Hallmark cards and consumerism, but then they even opened up the stores, the Walmarts, on Thanksgiving. And then they had the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday. And since then, it's been this unrelenting materialism. And I'm wondering if anywhere in that there's any sense of what this holiday is actually originally about.
Well, you know, when you bring that up, and I know this sounds like a plug, and it is to some extent, but it just happens that this book I've written, And God Said Billy, is really about this, because it's about a young man who comes out of this kind of pro-American exceptionalism view, religiously deluded, thinks he's been called by God to go save Hollywood, moves out to the West Coast in the mid-80s, and his life, of course, does not turn out as planned because he's deluded and he thinks he's hearing the voice of God. But in the end, through many twists and turns, he winds up in South Africa trying to direct a low-budget movie, which, by the way, I experienced when I was in the film business myself before I started writing full-time. So I draw on some of that, and coming bang smack dab up against the viciousness of apartheid, which was being carried on in the name of God and Reformed Calvinist theology of the Reconstructionist kind we've had here in this country with a lot of Republican candidates like Ted Cruz, for instance, he begins to run into some things which not only make him face some realities that are unpleasant about his own beliefs, but in the end, he meets some people who you might term are real Christians, in this case a group of monks living in the desert who have renounced all this materialistic drive that we take for granted here in the West. What's interesting to me in the story of And God Said Billy and this journey is that it's obviously a parable, if you like, for the journey that both individuals and our culture are going to have to take, whether they're religious or irreligious or even anti-religious, away from this kind of material trap that we've gotten into of an ever-growing economy and this idea that everything, you know, the sense of the sacred, the sense of the beautiful, all these things have to be sacrificed to commercial interests. This, by the way, is an odd thing, but it's someplace that I think some folks on the left, the old left, you might say, the real liberal left, the non-materialistic left, and some of the right-wing people on the Christian right, but not on the hard political right, but the kind of people who are some of the homeschool moms and living on farms off the grid who are just sick of the whole system. You know, this is an area we could agree. This is an area where you've got some basic bedrock-type people out there of very diverse backgrounds and diverse political opinions who are rejecting this paradigm that we've fallen into where whether it's Christmas or Halloween or Thanksgiving or, you know, on any given Sunday with the televangelists, everything being captured by this kind of spirit. And it runs through the entire culture. It isn't just religion and religious holidays. It's as everybody knows, it's college sports that become this multi-billion dollar industry for televisions and exploitation of athletes. People aren't paid. They're not really getting educated. They're getting injured. They're never going to be, you know, NFL players. Not that you'd wish that on your worst enemy these days with the head injury situation we know about. But nevertheless, you know, every single aspect of the society we're living in now is geared towards this kind of commercial paradigm. And I think, again, where you have to fault so many people on the religious right is that surely this would be something they're speaking up on. In other words, the commercialization of every sacred holiday would be where their interests would lie. But again, because they've thrown their hat into the ring so decidedly with corporate interests, people like the Koch brothers, the oil industry, all these other people who have financed the Republican Party, the people who have fought against doing something about global warming, and all these folks, you know, you have the odd situation where the Christians who want to see a sense of the sacred at least preserved for their own religious observance have given up on insisting, for instance, on some sense of sacrament and the sacred. In what you would think, if they were taking their religion seriously, would be a big issue to them. Not so, because since the religious right has made common cause with this kind of Ayn Randian, libertarian, far right of laissez-faire business, the moral, prophetic voice of Christians in this culture has been completely compromised. Yeah, you know, you can't be in bed with the Koch brothers and then turn around and say you want the sense of the sacred restored for Christmas when big business interests and corporate interests in this country would never allow that. And so I just think, you know, it's beyond simply, you know, the Christmas and Thanksgiving holiday. I think we've gotten into a situation where, whether it's the way women look at their bodies, the way young girls look at Vogue magazine models and try to replicate that behavior through, you know, becoming anorexic, whether it's you know, this kind of fascination we have with plastic surgery and denying the fact any of us are going to get old, and we just keep marching forward looking for these quick silver bullet solutions. The American way of doing business, whether it's our holidays, Christmas, whether it's the way we, you know, look at our families, the way we underpay our teachers and think that we can have a serious educational system, you know, all these things are part and parcel of a kind of a vision of life, which is, I think, seriously off the rails. And I think it goes back to this idea of just loss of intrinsic value in beauty and these other things. So to me, the message of Christmas is very simple, and that's create beauty, give love, find peace. That's the formula. And so much of what we do in American culture today, unfortunately from the right and unfortunately from people who call themselves Christians, and corporate interests, is to do just the opposite of that. You know, we do not create beauty. We create ugliness at every turn. Right? We do not give love. We simply value everything on a kind of a monetary scale. And we certainly aren't finding peace. And so to me, you know, the message of Christmas is the opposite of this kind of commercial engine that drives these holidays. And again, I think it's ironic, going back to my book And God Said Billy, that here I've got a story about a guy who pursues this kind of delusional corporate American way of doing things out to the very limit. And then in the end, where he finds peace is in the middle of a desert monastic community, as far away from the kind of commercial spin of not just the movie business that he's been in, but also from, you know, corporate life and the way America functions. And that's obviously, to me, the message of these holidays like Christmas, is to take a moment to reflect on the fact that the things we really value in life are not the ones that are being sold to us. And I think that's the bottom line.
But Frank, when you talk about conservatives there, and it's true, this country is very right wing, and certainly they've got the megaphone, they've got the money, they've got the media on their right side. But there are certain things about conservatives that that are interesting and are ironic to point out. For example, in terms of charity, there have been various polls done that indicate that conservatives are more generous than liberals in this country.
Right.
So explain that.
Well, I think that when you get down into the bedrock of the religious content of a lot of these people's lives and where they came from, even if that's not where they are anymore, there's that sense of community that does spring out of the best of what churches offer people. And I think that tradition is very strong within the conservative circles. The problem is that, of course, it's all going off the rails as well, because let's just take one example. You have Franklin Graham, I mentioned before. Here's a guy who runs a nonprofit organization where every dime that comes in is a donation to help the poor through something called the Samaritan's Purse, which is a spinoff of the Billy Graham organization he started. And his combined salary running Samaritan's Purse and the Billy Graham Association, which he runs now for his dad, who's old, his paycheck every year is a little over $640,000 a year, plus perks. So here's a guy who's living off the donations that are coming in to help the poor from people who are very well-meaning, walking home when you add up the private plane and all the rest of it with you know, a good chunk of $1 million plus a year, which may not be much for corporate America, but it's certainly not the idea that people have when they think of ministry. And certainly, you know, ministry in terms of raising money to help poor people in the name of Christ. So I think what's going to happen, unfortunately, is that the cynicism, what you might call the Walton family, the Walmart cynicism, you know, the Waltons who hold themselves up as a paragon of this kind of good Christian Southern family, who have made these hundreds of billions of dollars off paying people minimum wage and not offering health care. You know, the problem is that this fascination with private charity and private giving from the right is, I think, a kind of a blood money that is given in lieu of actually serious efforts to help people in society. I'll give you an example. You know, one of my children, Jessica, lives in Finland, and her kids are going to school there, and their teachers are regarded as as important as doctors or lawyers. They are recruited from the best universities. They are paid salaries commensurate with practicing medicine. It's one of the most valued, esteemed professions in the country. The dropout rate of teachers is less than 1% per year. In America, it's closer to 25-30%, depending on areas that people drop out after 4 or 5 years. It's a completely different culture of education, and yet private donations in Finland are less generous than those in America because taxes are higher and people see the entire community as responsible for seriously addressing these issues. I think what we do in America, rather, you know, we're the kind of people that, speaking of Walmart, you know, underpay the employee and then put a food basket out for people who don't have enough money for Christmas dinner. That's our way of doing it. So, you know, I think if the right was serious about charity and giving in this country, what they would be doing is working for an equitable tax structure, reform of education that would recruit from our best universities with the starting salary that was high and attractive, and much more than just the money, give the kind of prestige and honor to the teaching profession that it deserves. You know, these are the kind of things the right wing doesn't do. So throwing a couple thousand dollars at your local education foundation to help buy books and pencils for a school where teachers are using their own salaries to supplement the lack of materials in inner city schools, I don't consider charity. And so I don't look at this as a great pat on the back to the to religious people or the right. I think what would be much more telling is if they would elect officials who would say, let's spend less on defense and more on education. Let's cut class size in half. Right. You know, let's make sure that everybody is in Head Start. Right. Let's provide babysitters and childcare for single mothers so that they can cope instead of taking their kids away and shuffling them off into a foster care system because we've driven them over the brink.
Right.
That to me would be much more interesting than charity. So I'm not particularly taken with the fact that the right-wing Christians give away more money than right. liberals when it comes to charitable donations. You know, my view is that's not the way to do it, and it's failing, because if they were serious people, they would be fighting for a culture and a structure economically that would advantage people rather than disadvantaging them.
Well, Frank Schaefer, I thank you so much for joining us here today on this Christmas holiday.
Hey, Ian, thanks a lot.
Again, I've been speaking with Frank Schaefer, who's a best-selling author of fiction and nonfiction. His parents, Francis and Edith Schaefer, were world-famous evangelical speakers and authors, and he previously worked with such figures as Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, and Focus on the Family's James Dobson. Frank Schaefer, however, felt increasingly alienated and experienced a crisis of faith that would ultimately lead to his departure from the evangelical movement, and his novels include Portofino and Saving Grandmother, and his nonfiction books include Crazy for God, Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism, and Sex, Mum, and God. And his latest is And God Said Billy. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with a Catholic sister who works with migrant laborers in Central Florida.